You are listening to PLV Radio Network. Join us in celebrating all of life's possibilities.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Positive Vibrations Roundtable. With me, your host, Sarah Troy, and my guest today, Jutta Valborg and Bill Mackey. I've probably pronounced Jutta's name wrong, and she'll correct me in a moment. It is a German name, and she is a lady that lives both in Germany and in Australia. And she is a midwife who has delivered, or not delivered, because pizzas get delivered, who has birthed around 2,800 births. Each time that birth is a wonderful, exuberant experience. And although birthing can be painful, it is one of those pains you don't mind going through because the gift at the end of it is something there are no words for. And she's been doing this a long time. She knows exactly what she's doing. And one of the calls that we need to do is to bring awareness to midwifery and why it is becoming a little bit obsolete today, or being pushed to the background, and that the medical is being pushed to the foreground, and almost it's become so clinical and so mechanical to give birth today, it's taken the joy out of it. It's introduced a few too many drugs into it, and it really feels more like a manufacturing plant than a wonderful experience of birthing a human being. Now, Bill Mackey is a host on Wise Health. You've heard with him quite a number of times in roundtables and on his show with Sue Manathan. But little do people know that he actually started a company along with his wife when they were birthing 9 children of their own, 5 of them born at home. And they decided to form an online information and rights and first of its kind out there on the rights of what your rights are in giving birth, on the beauty of giving birth at home. They shared videos, they shared stories, they educated doctors, they educated the people, and it was an enormous site for quite a number of times before it came down. So, you know, you may find it odd that there's a man in this conversation, but no, this man has a lot to say about it. So let's get straight to it, and let's kind of discover what your rights are in giving birth, why it's a beautiful experience not to be afraid of, and how we do have to stop clinicalizing it and making it a manufacturing plant and getting back to the true beauty of birthing. So welcome to the show, Jutta and Bill.
Well, welcome, Sarah. Yeah, wonderful.
Well, it's lovely to have you back again, Jutta, because you had a show with us a couple of weeks ago where you actually talked to parents that are expecting, and the whole procedure of going through the 9 months and preparing for the birth. And so that really addresses the parents and the babies. And today, of course, we're going to go a little bit more in depth, on midwifery, on medicine, and everything else. And Bill, you know, I'm going to go to Bill right now, just because I want Bill to actually lay down the ground of how he's a part of this. Bill?
So how I got involved in childbirth is I have 9 children. First 4 of them were hospital births. Second one was a C-section. And how we got into natural childbirth or home birth was actually my wife. When we first got together, I am a person from very young age. I am of the belief that we are basically sensual, pleasure-seeking beings. And that birth, as with a lot of other things in life, is a natural body process. My wife, when we got married, she was very young, and we went through this whole process of, let's go through the hospital births. And
sorry, you're coming in and out a little bit.
The second child came around, it was a C-section. Okay, so by the time when we had our second child, it was a C-section, which is an unnecessary C-section. Then after that, every single one of those births that we had, so there's another 7 after that, they were all what we classify as VBAC, which is a vaginal birth after cesarean, which in North America is very rare. It's actually something that's outlawed now in British Columbia thanks to changes in the law again. But to prove that, yeah, you can have a vaginal birth after cesarean does work. And what happened in my own personal experience, because I was always on my wife from the very beginning of trying as many natural things as possible. I'm a staunch advocate of breastfeeding. There's nothing healthier for a baby and not only from the nutritional value, but from the emotional and growth stimulation that comes from breastfeeding. There's absolutely nothing better for a baby than breastfeeding. And I've been on, was on my wife's case from day one to breastfeed. What happened after our fourth child was born, she finally started listening to me, because, you know, anybody can go and give birth. You know, you can just go out in a bush and give birth behind a tree, and then you can get back up. And finally it sunk in. One day I came home from work. She said, you know what, I'm going to have a home birth this time, and I found myself this amazing midwife. Now, at that time, midwifery and home births were illegal in this province. So it was an illegal midwife, and we were actually breaking the law by having this home birth at home. I was so jubilant and excited about finally, you know, being able, as a man, being the type of man that I am, I thought this was going to be amazing. Because one thing, guys, that you have to realize, of all the things you can ever experience in life, and for those of you who have never experienced childbirth, it is unquestionably the most sexual and sensual experience you will ever, ever experience in life. That unquestionable love, not only that you have for your partner during this process, but when that baby, when you hold that baby in your hands for that very first time, you will never experience anything like that in your life. So when my wife finally decided, let's have this childbirth at home, have a home birth, we brought in a very highly respected illegal midwife, and she's actually gone to prison a couple of times because of her beliefs here, and for fighting for the rights of childbearing women to have that right to determine their own destiny when it comes to childbirthing. Her name is Gloria LeMay. She's still alive today. She's still an advocate, and she still practices, and she's still teaching doulas, and she's doing amazing things still in the childbirth industry. But with Gloria coming into our life, it got my wife to a point where, yes, we had her first unassisted natural childbirth at home. And I'm telling you guys, there's nothing like it. Nothing in the world that you can ever replace those experiences. And that was the first one. The second one, we had a midwife come along, Gloria come back again, but basically it was like, Gloria, get out of our way. Like, just leave us alone. You know, go get us some sandwiches, go get us some tea, you know, we need something down at the store. You know, one of the kids is crying, deal with them. We just want to be left alone. And then for the next three kids after that, we went unassisted. We also had in there, my wife got more and more and more into the natural childbirth thing. We had what's called a lotus birth. So from the second one on, they were all lotus births, which means you birth the placenta, you don't cut the umbilical cord. Basically, you basically have wrapped up the placenta in like towels and stuff, so it doesn't rot, and it just naturally, you know, all the nutrients come out of the, when you leave the placenta attached to the baby for a longer period of time, all those nutrients in the placenta actually get continued through into the baby. The baby's actually healthier, and in the long term, they end up with a much healthier ability to fight diseases, and their antibodies are built up much better because of a lotus birth. So the last four of them were all lotus births. And then after doing two solos, my wife basically got ticked at all of us. It was a January. It was freezing cold out. My wife says, all of you, get the hell out of the house. So you're all going out. You're not going to come home for about 5 or 6 hours. And we basically were kicked out of the house. We had to go tobogganing and freezing our ass off in the freezing cold, waiting for her to give birth. And when we came home 5 hours later, there she was in bed with the baby. That's my experiences with childbirth and the fact that, you know, it is a natural process that the human body goes through. The one thing that came out of all of these experiences, and actually after the very first childbirth at home, was my wife started a website. It just started out as her telling her own story. And basically it was like a 3 or 4 page website. And within a matter of about 6 months to a year, that site was serving over 1 million web pages a day, serving around the world. And most of the people who were coming to the website were not only expectant parents, but because of our connections with Gloria, and my wife has this ability to get connected. She got very well known throughout the midwifery community around the world, everywhere from some of your fellow practitioners in Germany probably heard of this site. It was called Birth Love. in Australia, it was very huge. And eventually that site became a pay website, and the only people that basically ended up subscribing to the website were midwives around the world who were using this resource to, basically it was a huge, we had about 4,500 different articles up on the site about natural childbirths, all the different types of childbirths, breastfeeding. We're also pretty heavily into other alternative things like homeschooling, so all the kids are homeschooling, so we had homeschooling and alternative educational things, and it just grew from there.
And became a kind of an educational...
That's how I got involved in this whole childbirthing thing and where I got my expertise from.
And, you know, we know that not everybody can give birth on their own, you know, and that it's always safer to have a midwife there. You know, you guys were old hats at it at this point, but it is much safer to have a midwife there. And, you know, even just for the support of going through it and having somebody there that knows what they're doing. Right, Jutta?
Oh, well, look, it's very interesting. Thank you, Bill, for sharing all of that. Very, very interesting. And clearly, as a midwife, I would say... You know, it's quite a different aspect. Midwives are actually not always there to necessarily do something or interfere, but we are experts on birth. There is no doubt. We are especially trained for that. And midwives, no matter where they are, well, their job is to make sure that, you know, things are running smooth and that everything is, you know, going well. In case there's a problem, the midwife would be the person that would see the problem and would be able to help, or if worse comes to worse, or in this case also maybe good to something, would help you to transfer you to a place where you would get the adequate, the right help. And the thing is very interesting, you know, I think in the tradition of men, in general, midwives have been around for a long time. They weren't really called midwives, but, you know, like hundreds of years back or whatever, or even in tribal surroundings, there will always be a woman that has some expertise in birthing, that has been sitting through many births, that will help you and, you know, stay with you. So, but I think it's wonderful that men are involved. And, you know, I started being a midwife in the early 80s. This is just actually the point where in Europe, men were coming along to the birth, even to a hospital, to be there and support their partners and take part in the birth. Unfortunately, midwifery is very much under attack worldwide right now, which is sad because, you know, midwives all over the world would love to offer a one-to-one support to all women because that would just make it really, really good.
Exactly. Now, why is it being so under attack? Is this because, you know, doctors have stepped in? Is it an economics thing? Is it a law thing? You know, why has it become kind of so manufacturing and taking away that beautiful aid of a midwife? I mean, they're more than qualified to birth a child and, of course, see what the problems are if they have to go to the hospital. What is the main, you know, thing against midwifery?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. But first of all, I want to say, for instance, in Germany, midwives have to be present at the birth. It's a law. And so even when you give birth in a hospital, it will be a midwife, and she is trained for at least 3 years to be a midwife. So by law in Germany, midwives can birth a baby all by themselves, but doctors need to have a midwife along their side. We are the only country in the world that actually has this law. Now, one thing, when I said, you know, midwifery is under attack, is economical reasons. It's, you know, other people would like to do that. Like, you know, I know, like in Canada, midwifery didn't exist anymore. In New Zealand, midwifery didn't exist anymore. It was taken away. It was only obstetric nurses. And don't get me wrong, you know, I have nothing against obstetric nurses, but... As the name says, they're obstetric nurses, they're not midwives. Midwives are trained to get the holistic picture and the whole picture of a woman, the partner, the baby, everything that's going on. I think there's a lot of political power issues, women's rights, and things like this going on in the whole world. For many midwives, the biggest problem right now is the liability insurance that we're facing. And again, you know, it's all right to have a liability insurance, but if it's that skyrocket high that you can't make your living anymore, then you create a problem. And it's like pushing it, you know, under the table a little bit out of the door. Say, for instance, in many countries like Australia, liability insurance is incredibly high. In Germany, it has tripled since 2010. We're looking at more than 7,000 euros, which is incredibly a lot. And to make this money, midwives would have to work 3 months, just, you know, birthing for 3 months and having had no food on their table. So there's many ways how it gets pushed out. And I think it's also the lack of understanding, and there is a conflict of interest in women's health and who is really doing what. So when you look at the world, we are really in the pits. You look at Hungary, where home birthing is illegal. And for me, as a midwife, with a background in Germany, Australia, and New Zealand, the biggest question is, why can't we have good midwifery care wherever birthing is happening? You know, now in New Zealand, in Australia, it's also midwives working in labor wards, in home birthing, in birth centers, same in Germany. And for me is, I think, why can we not, why is the system unable to create choice for women mm-hmm. instead of telling them to this or do that? And that in the backlash then will also support, again, midwives. It's a very interesting topic at the moment. I think there's a lot of money issues. You know, there was a movie made called The Business of Being Born by an American filmmaker, and I thought the title is really good because this is really much what this is about, you know, about controlling things, about making money out of things. And, you know, for me, being a midwife for more than 30 years, I find it rather upsetting because it doesn't hit the topic where it should, you know. It doesn't work for real woman's health. It doesn't work for woman's satisfaction. It doesn't work for parent satisfaction. It's just like, as you said, a machinery in, out.
Yeah.
And it's much about time resources inside a system than about what is good for women, their babies and their partners, and even the people working alongside with them.
You know, induction, you haven't had that baby yet, we've got to get it out, let's induce you, now let's do forceps, now let's do epidural, oh, that hasn't worked, now let's do C-section, and it, you know, really does feel like a manufacturing plant instead of letting it be a natural process.
Sarah, because the problem really is, according to a Cochrane study, at the moment, at this moment in time, where we have so much knowledge, where we have so many possibilities, where we can do so much, we know more than ever before, we still have the highest intervention rate at the birth ever. We have the highest C-section rate.
Actually getting worse.
It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, we look worldwide at numbers from 30 to 80%. Countries like, for instance, Brazil or China, you know, those countries have an incredible high C-section rate. And it's not because women can't birth anymore. It's just because someone feels like, okay, let me just, you know, let the cash, the dollar really roll in. This is at least what I think. You know, whenever I have clients from China, they usually say to me, oh, and all my friends, Jutta, all my friends had a C-section. I say, oh, yeah, why is that? And, you know, it makes people think.
In North America, we have another issue that happens quite a bit, too. And it's a it's got to do with the information in a way it's actually presented to women. From the medical profession is that
you're coming in and out, Bill. Am I losing your voice a bit?
How's that?
Well, just keep it's the in and out. So hopefully we can keep you with us.
Yeah, I hope so too.
In North America, there's a lot of similarities between what you're saying about what's happening in New Zealand, Germany, and it's true about a lot of European countries. North America, it's even more fragmented because we have a country like Canada, and it varies from province to province, whether you have midwifery or no midwives and all that. These sorts of healthcare issues are left to the individual provinces, and it's the same way in the States. You have like a major country that just runs a health program, but then each of the individual states legislates their own laws regulating midwifery and natural childbirth and stuff. One of the big things that happened in North America as we were, especially in BC, as we were fighting to get the midwifery approved, and believe me, we didn't get what we wanted. We ended up with a system whereby it was basically gynecological nurses, obstetric nurses, who actually got certified to become midwives, so they didn't, like you pointed out, they don't have the training in the other side of the natural care of a pregnant woman, which is all holistics. you know, all the benefits to natural herbs and all of these other treatments that go along with proper nutrition for dealing with a pregnant woman, and then the postpartum care of a pregnant woman or a mother that's given birth. Our midwifery system that we ended up adopting here was sort of a compromise, just to shut up all the bitching from the people who wanted this ability to have home births. It's basically the only way we could get home births, so they gave us that as the solution to is this licensed midwifery thing that was based on 100% medical intervention, where it's all trained nurses that go through the system, and they're strictly just nurses with this additional care that now they can practice. As they were getting that victory, we were getting clobbered on the other side by the medical profession. Because the medical profession was slamming down, and for the last, well, let's go back, maybe just, we got into this just in the mid-80s when we got involved in it. And what happened was is there was this huge transition in the medical profession. They were trying very hard because we, in North America, there is so much intervention. I bet you right now the rate of intervention, and I consider anything, as soon as they decide to induce you, that's medical intervention. And in North America, I guarantee you that rate's got to be somewhere around 97% of all births in hospital or have some sort of intervention. Whether it be, like I say, most of the interventions are as a result of doing and using induction drugs. Problem that then exacerbated from that is that with the induction drugs, we ended up getting a whole bunch of lawsuits against doctors because once they started screwing around with Pitocin and oxytocin and all these other things to induce labor, they start this other artificial time clock, which now means that, okay, because they're screwing up with the body's natural hormone system, the woman's body's not able to respond and relax and all of these things. So we ended up with this 24-hour deadline. They don't have the... Once they start inducing, if you don't give birth by within 24 hours, bang, automatic C-section. So we are fighting this other battle on the other side where this overuse of induction drugs to expedite the natural birth process was causing an exponential rise in C-section rates. Now you take the C-section rates and the doctors are saying, okay, well, it's unhealthy for you now because we've cut you open, that you can never have a natural childbirth after that. Therefore, they started fighting to get the laws changed so that once they've now subscribed you, so if you're a first-time mom and you actually happen to get into one of these 24-hour timestamps and you ended up having to have a C-section, now every child after that, you have no choice now. You have to have a C-section. And as a result of that, the medical profession, especially the administrations in hospitals, they're sitting there going, wow, this is really cool. Because we had it down to a 24-hour time period, so you could bring a woman in, induce her, and she had the baby regardless within 24 hours. My wife and I were a little bit different when we went into hospital. We wouldn't let them do things, so we actually pressed them, and were really annoying whenever we had to, with the four children that we had in hospital, because we didn't obey those rules. But typically, that's what happens. So you have this 24-hour clock, so now they could book the delivery suites. They knew that woman would only be there maybe 24 hours to 36 hours maximum stay in the hospital. Then they discovered that because this increased rate in the efficiencies at which they got really good at doing C-sections, as they became better at doing C-sections, they actually found that they could reduce the time it takes them to do a C-section. So now when you go to a doctor's office, the first thing that the doctor starts preaching you is all the things that can go wrong with your birth. Don't mention the cause. They don't mention what the causes are. Yeah. Why? Because they're not telling you that the induction screws up your natural body rhythm to give birth. Absolutely. And then because of that, we have to follow the 24-hour rule. Otherwise, you're going to sue my ass for everything I've got. Because if I let it go beyond the 24 hours, then the risks to the baby and the mother go through the roof exponentially. So therefore, you end up with having a C-section. And because I don't want to get sued and later on, because of the fact that there might be a 1 in 10,000 chance that the C-section didn't heal itself properly, so a subsequent birth might end up being a difficulty, we'll just keep mandating the loss. But the main thing is the doctors are disinforming the women. And they're actually disinforming the women in a way that violates their human rights. This country,
Because, can I say something?
Women right
Bill, Dr. Wynn?
Sorry. I do agree that, you know, definitely birth is really a human right. But I also have to say, you know, I think one of the problems is that many of our birth professionals, and I really include now also all the obstetricians and young doctors, midwives, obstetric nurses in this case, doulas, you know, the problem is, and this is what I have observed in 30 years, is that, okay, you know, most women at this point in time will still give birth in a hospital. And that's just a fact. This is how it is. So that's why I also really want to speak about that. I love home birth. I love birth centers, but the reality is many women are still going to the hospital. And that might be changing, hopefully, with the system changing something. But at this point in time, what I also see is that a lot of what we call so-called birth experts are really experts on interventional birth. Mm-hmm. Now, from their point of view, they don't know any better, you see. I don't think that all of them are bad people and, you know, and want to
not be
good to women. It's the system. And they are actually, in a way, caught up in the system. Mm-hmm. I was actually discussing this with the head of a very big women's hospital in Berlin. And I said to him, look, don't get me wrong, but your experts are experts on intervention. So all they do is, out of this fear-driven environment at the moment, whether it's, oh, there will be an insurance issue. And, you know, I see when I sometimes came to the hospital that young doctors said, oh, yeah, no, I think we better have to do something now, or we should give something, or we should some medication, or we better wheel off to the theater, because if they have no one to teach them, they will always act out of their fear and what they've been seen. Because when you are a young doctor inside the system, well, you want your ass covered practically, and you don't want the big boss to go, why did you do this? Why did you do that? If you have no one, and even if some midwives there have no knowledge of how it really works, how birth really works, when you don't intervene, you know, then you really have this problem that a knowledge actually gets lost. And I think this is one point where the key really lies, that a lot of professionals still have actually no understanding on how birth itself really works. And as long as we don't change that, nothing will change. And on the other side, it's the parents themselves that need to be well educated, so they can really ask, well, is this really necessary? And why is that? And what options do I have? You know, for me, I look at it like a big, big, big system that works from all kinds of angles and perspectives. It's not just one thing in the chain that does that. It's, you know, a combination of things. So I think what it really needs to change things is, okay, you know, Bill, it's wonderful that you free birthed. And there's a free birthing movement in Australia, which I sometimes think is also related to a cost factor, because some women don't want to go to the hospital and can't afford a home birth, and for this reason choose that. But, you know, as I said, I really like to speak to hopefully an audience where there's, you know, many, many, many women that are either pregnant or will have a baby or have a sister, a daughter, you know, a niece, whatever it is in the family. And, you know, to wake up to what are your rights and what can you do to get the birth you want, and for birth professionals to think, well, what happened to birth? You know, birth is the second oldest process of the whole entire planet. Yeah. Why is it that people think birth is not working anymore? I think that's just not true.
You know, as a person who went through, you know, kind of the wrong thing, the first thing is they tell you the good news, you're pregnant. And then it's kind of almost putting the fear of God in you. You know, I was asked, do you want a C-section? I said, well, why would I want a C-section? And you know, immediately, and, you know, I was offered it straight away. And, you know, no looking on the history or anything else. I mean, it ended up that I was induced. My two babies were forceps. They broke the forceps, bringing it out of my son because he was stuck in the canal. And then with my third child, they C-sectioned me because they didn't want me to go through what I went through last time. But at that point, I was so caught up in the system. I had absolutely no idea there were any other rights. I had no idea that there was anything else to know, because we as a patient go to our doctor and assume they know everything and are going to give you those options. And if they don't, We don't know the knowledge is out there. And certainly when I was birthing, there was no other knowledge out there. There was none whatsoever.
Look, it makes me, I feel so much for you, Sarah, when I hear this story, because I think I wish I would have been around, because I would not have offered you a C-section. I would have said to you, wow, great, you're pregnant. Fantastic. How are you feeling? What are your dreams, your visions? What would you like? And even if you look at me with big eyes saying, I actually don't know, then I would say, right, let's sit down and I'll give you a chat and we talk like what birth could be like and what options you really should have. You know, for me, it's much about choice, because when you
having an experience, yeah. You know, instead of putting the fear of God in you immediately, like there's something wrong with you, you're pregnant, so therefore, you know, it's more
as soon as possible because it's a disease.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, we're telling you from a North American perspective of how the medical profession treats childbirth and pregnancy,
and that's the reality
that we live in.
And that's partly why we
that's why we set up the website. It was called Birth Love. And it was basically just, I agree with a lot of all the things that you're saying. Like, it's the medical profession itself has lost touch with what the true process of birth is. And therefore, the education system that they're raising these new doctors and they're coming into the world in, they don't understand the natural process of childbirth. All they know and all they're educated to understand is, bang, you've got the 9-month thing, 42 weeks, we gotta get that baby out of there. Bang, if it doesn't come out within the 24 hours after we've given them 4 or 5 hours of natural
pushing
contractions, then we'll just, you know, induce it, and then we got our 24 hours from there, and it's become this science of production. Rather than the science of love. You know, childbirth is a science of love. And when you actually...
Oh, definitely.
On our website, we had thousands and thousands of women who shared their experience of childbirth. Hospital, home, water, you name it.
And that's how it should be built. Yeah. Because, you know, it's a process. And women, their
process
partners,
of love.
Yeah, should be empowered to also feel like, hey, this is, I can do that, because, you know, this is a global matter. Everyone was born once. Yes. End of story. We are all have been born. And, you know, I always
feel like...
We're not
cloned yet.
No, not yet. And, you know, I really feel like, as I agree, the art of giving birth with the art of midwifery has gone lost. And, you know, I know that we have all kinds of perspectives on it in places in the world, but I agree. Giving birth is really an act of love, because a baby hopefully should be made with love, carried with love, cared for with love, and birthed with love. And then finally, once it's born, received by the mother, and then, you know, hugged and kissed with so much love. And this usually happens when we have good hormones and all those things. When we're induced and we feel really scared and we feel like, far out, I have no idea what's going on here, and we get kind of robbed by a great experience, a life-changing experience. That is what birth really can be. You know, if the system robs this experience from us and leaves us feeling shattered, the feeling of failure, why can't I do it? Why can't my body do it? Plus, you know, the lack of all those good hormones that make you feel good and also help your baby, then you really have, and this is what the next study showed, like, for instance, when you have an epidural, due to all the things that happen hormonally and so on, again, you have the a rising number of postnatal depression. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, sorry, folks, in the States, things look really, really bad, because the number of maternal mortality rates in the States is on the rise again. And this, again, is shocking. Shocking in the year 2015 with so much knowledge. So many things we could do to make birth a better thing,
just give me one sec, because you touched on something there about the sudden rise in American infant fatality.
Postnatal depression, and, you know, America has a rise in number of maternal mortality. So in the US, the numbers are really shocking. And when you think, with so much knowledge, so much medicine, everything around, we know what to, we could know what to eat. We could know how to use the body. We do know much than, you know, more than ever before in the whole picture of men. And still, we are not able to use this knowledge wisely. Well, and I find that really sad.
One of the reasons I think why is like in most industries, you know, you're a holistic midwife, because you will treat the person right from nutrition, meditation, yoga, you know, going through the morning sickness, going through everything, you know, right up to the birth, whether it's you or another midwife in your team, because obviously the midwife can't always be guaranteed to be there when the birth comes. But, you know, you're there with them through the months, going through the experience, there to ask answer questions and how to eat properly, how to rest, how to do this, how to do that. You don't get that kind of support from your doctor. The other thing is just look at it. You've got somebody who does anesthetizing, somebody who does this, somebody who does that. Everything is so disconnected from one or the other. Again, it feels like a manufacturing plant. You're now going on to the arms and legs. Now you're going over to this. You know, they don't seem to work together, and there isn't a whole approach to pregnancy and birthing. It all seems to be compartmentalized.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. You know, the problem is also that it's not treated as a normal thing. It's treated as if you're sick, but you're not
treated
sick,
like a disease.
You know?
It's treated like a disease, and it's an epidemic because everybody's giving birth, so therefore it's an epidemic disease, and we've changed our whole perspective of it.
May I say also what is really absolutely not helping is all the shows you see on television. Now, I don't know exactly what kind of shows you have on telly in the States, but you know, like in the UK, they have a show called One Born Every Minute and so on. But you know, many of those shows, you know, drama sells really well. You don't just want a woman sitting in the semi-dark, gently breathing a baby into the world. You really, in the book I'm writing, I have a chapter called Birth, a Modern Hollywood Drama. And yes, it really is, because that's what is making money. That's a bestseller, you know, a woman screaming on top of her voice. When you watch any movies, you always see a woman just screaming, and then you usually see a group of men arriving. I never really see a midwife arriving with a blue hat mask, and all they do is wheel the woman on a stretcher on her back, the worst of all, into a theater. And I always think, even as a young midwife, I thought, completely wrong picture. Where's the midwife? Mm-hmm. Why are people so over the top? You know, okay, the woman is giving birth to a baby. Great. Well, let her just have the baby, and let her, for God's sake, get off that blimmin' stretcher.
Well, you know, there's the other show, which is wonderful because it's around the 50s and 60s, called The Midwife. You know, where midwives were the people that you called. I mean, doctors were only brought in if there was a problem. You know, most people had them at home. You know, they didn't go into the hospitals. And it was a natural occurrence, and they had support through their pregnancy, the birth, and afterwards. And I think this is another thing. This is another thing I think, that the drugs and the whole process of giving birth today is, you know, within 24 hours, you're sent home. In some cases, the same day. And you're now looking after a baby. And, you know, I remember after my C-section going home looking after two other children and having a house guest and having to cook, clean, do this and that. And I was exhausted. I just had a major operation.
Yes, a baby. You did. You know, one of the second biggest abdominal surgery that you can have. And can I say again, you know, I have to say my heart is with all those women in the States, because I know you really, really have to work very hard and struggle with things. Again, you know, in Germany, the system is very different, but Germany is very unique. We go and see the women for postnatal visits. Hold your hands on your seats, ladies, 37 times up to 2 months after the birth.
You don't get any support here at all, not even once.
But I have to honestly say the system for women in Germany is really fantastic, because, you know, it's much about choice. Nevertheless, it still is a fear-driven thing, and the numbers are still not as they should be. And plus, again, coming back to the other issue, is that midwives are so regulated by the insurance companies. There are many midwives, because our liability insurance became so outrageously high, will give up their work because, you know, it's very hard to make a living. Because, in fact, even if we love what we do, it still is how we actually make our income. So, you know, you can't just always, you understand, it's a normal thing. But
it's actually something that if you look at it, not just to do with midwifery, but to do with our waste on food, to do with a numerous amount of things behind it is lawyers, laws, regulations they put in there. And they're not sensible regulations. They're not there to protect the people. They're purely there to protect the industries, whether it be medical industry, hospital industry, restaurant industries. And, you know, it's got out of control, all of these laws, because it's a law for the law's sake that, you know, you're having to pay this premium against being sued. And that actually now becomes a detriment to the patients that you are with, because there's always that fear, I've got to get this baby out, otherwise I could get sued.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I still think, because for me, many days I think, oh, okay, what can we do to change that? You know, because to dream of it, I have dreams, I have visions of how that should be. But I'm also realistic. I think, okay, what step is a step that is good to take, that many people can take? And, you know, coming back to what we spoke of in the very beginning is that, you know, women should not feel like victims, and women should not feel like, you know, little, how can we say, women have rights. Even when they go into a system, they still have a right. You know, it's not that you just give your identity at the door of your doctor's office or your midwife's office or when you enter a hospital. You still have rights, and you have to learn about your rights.
Yeah.
And you also have to stand up for your rights, because otherwise nothing will ever change, right? I'm sure Bill is with me on that one.
That's exactly why we built that website. It was all of, we had an online petition. It was a global petition for the rights of childbearing women. And over, like, the site, we only ran it for about 3.5 years. Over that time, we had somewhere around 750,000 women sign that petition. And basically, it was just saying, look, it's my body, it's my right.
And yeah.
As we started empowering women, we got into a lot of trouble with a lot of local doctors here, because we were empowering women here and say, okay, well, if you go to choose your doctor, first off, here it was getting our medical system's gone down the toilet. But even back then, you could go into your family doctor and say, okay, cool, I like you as a family doctor, but you know what? I don't want you to be delivering my baby. I want to have choices. I want to be able to see this specific doctor, because this specific doctor is a specialist and he specializes and practices at this hospital. And that's a hospital of choice I want. And so we were empowering women to say, look, you can't tell me shit that I don't want to listen to. We were giving people the right information so that they were empowered when they sat in their doctor's office and they didn't let the doctors shuffle them as a piece of paper.
Excellent.
One office to the next office to the next office. Mm-hmm. And we informed women. The whole point behind it is that the drug companies and the medical profession, you have to inform women about the risks of induction.
Just because it's
common practice
doesn't
mean it's right. Yeah. The drugs. We were in a major law battles throughout the North America. There was a drug called Cytotec. I don't know if you had problems with it in Europe.
Oh, I tell you, can I say something about Cytotec? Because
good, I knew I'd hit you somewhere along the way.
Yeah, because Cytotec was introduced in the early 90s. It was sort of a new drug for induction. And I can tell you, honestly, at this point, I worked for a medium-sized hospital in Berlin, which was also a teaching hospital where, you know, midwives would undergo their three-year training. And to say so, when Cytotec came on the market, you know, it's very cheap, I have to say. It's not really for childbirth, but it has a side effect, so-called, that it works on a certain group of muscles. And that's why suddenly obstetricians used it to do inductions. But because they didn't know, you would have to sign, and still until today, as a woman, you have to sign a paper that you know it's not has not been officially proven to work for childbirth. So women signed that paper, but you know, it's like, oh, we've used it for many years, we have good experience. But can I say, I remember in the early days when it was used, the dosage that was given was so high that sometimes contractions would just go completely crazy and emergency C-sections had to be performed
because
you could not
slow the body down.
Because you could not, yeah. because you couldn't stop those contractions anymore, and the babies were reacting to it. It was terrible. And
not
it
only
still
that,
is
the drug
terrible.
Was so bad that the contractions got so bad that a lot of women ended up with hernias. And actually, the vaginal walls and stuff just got totally ripped apart because they become so they're uncontrollable.
Yeah.
Anyways, that Cytotec was, I wanted to hit on that drug in particular because that was a drug that came out. And it was a drug that was developed in the States. In the States, we have a really unique way of getting drugs approved. And it's a great law. It's called the Orphan Drug Bill.
Uh-huh.
So what drug companies were doing is they'd pick these diseases that basically do experimentation for drugs for very rare diseases that only affect very, very small populations. Drug companies were complaining and saying, well, it costs too much money and we'll never make any money doing it because the certification process was very expensive and takes a long time to do. So in the States, we were involved in working with coming up with these new laws for the FDA. And under that act is called the Orphan Drug Bill. The Orphan Drug Bill basically was set up so the drug companies then could develop these drugs for these really rare exotic diseases. Cytotec was one of those drugs. It was a drug that was specifically geared to deal with a specific form of geriatric incontinence. Believe it or not. Got approved by the FDA for that application. But before it got introduced and got approved, the FDA, the company that manufactured Cytotec, had already started promoting it through the gynecology thing because one of the discoveries they made is, as you said, that they sort of saw that through the way it was designed, it was affecting certain reactions in muscle tissue. But the thing was, is they'd already knew that it was affecting pregnant women because secretly the drug company had been testing it that way without the FDA knowing. So they basically just spread the rumor amongst the gynecology profession in the United States. So when the drug hit the market, every gynecologist started playing around with this, and it became the new miracle induction drug, because it, you know, what normally would, if you use Pitocin or Wisdiethrin or oxytocin, which are natural derivatives, this thing shortened down labor exponentially. The problem was this, they didn't know enough knowledge, they had no knowledge about how rapidly this thing, the doses and how rapidly it actually accelerated the contractions, and it caused a nightmare in this country. And we sued them, and it was a nightmare.
And they don't use it anymore, do they, Jutta?
They still use it.
Oh, no, they still use it. They still use it. And to be correct, you don't use it in the midst of labor. You would only use it when you do an induction to get it started. Well, you can induce labor in two ways, many ways. You can do it in a natural way, but now when you look at it like in a medical induction, you can say, if the cervix is still closed and very long, then you would use Cytotec, and this is what it's for, because it has prostaglandin, and that helps to get the cervix soft and open. But, you know, as I said, it has been now around since the 90s. It's actually also a drug that is used after the birth sometimes if you experience, you know, a heavy bleeding. And put it this way, I thought it was shocking when I experienced, you know, these emergency C-sections after the use of it. It still is a very common thing and has been around now since the 90s. Yeah. And,
you know, mid-90s, I think, was when it first started showing up.
Yeah. But, you know, there is more to this than that because, you know, how can I say? For me, the general question is, why on earth do we have so many inductions? And first of all, why are they necessary? Because, in fact, most of them are probably not necessary, yeah? So,
yeah. And let the baby come when the baby needs to come, as long as the mother and the baby aren't in distress.
Coming back to what I said in the beginning, is we have so many options and possibilities. Say, for instance, you know, now, you know, doctors or special nurses, midwives can make a scan and see how is the blood flow to the placenta. So really, what is the problem? Why, with all the knowledge we have and the technique we have, why can't we just use it in a positive way? Say, if you are you know, a normal pregnancy can go up to 42 weeks. That is normal, you know.
Yes.
And there's many countries in the world where they will induce you already 1 week after your due date, or they get stressed when you're 10 days over your due date. And I never get it, because we have so much knowledge, we could use it for all those women and just patiently relax and sit back and say, as long as everything is fine, and there's many ways how we can really discover that things are fine, and just wait for the birth to happen. Because statistically, 98% of all women will give birth up until 42 weeks. So why is that hurry after 40 weeks? I never get it, you know?
Right. And, so there's also another huge issue with the whole 40-week thing. That even that is not really a true measure to go by. It's a great average to work from.
Yeah, but it's an average.
The problem is that women's menstrual cycles, the 40-week principle works really cruel. Because the fact that so many women are on like a 28 to 30 day menstrual cycle. But where it fails miserably is when you get a woman who has a menstrual cycle. My wife's menstrual cycle is about 43, 44 weeks.
Exactly, Bill. And when a woman comes in, you normally ask her, what is your menstrual cycle? Okay? And if she would give this answer, then you know, oh, right, yeah. Okay, she might be really going quite well overdue, and all these kind of things. This is what I'm saying. We have so much knowledge. We should use it for the good of women and their birth, you know, instead of just getting stuck on a number, because a number is just, sorry, not going to do it, you know.
It's the one size fits all, and that's what they're trying to do.
Proof that When you actually follow the menstrual cycle and you calculate roughly the number of weeks you need, it actually works out almost perfectly right on, because my wife, because she knows that her menstrual cycle is like, instead of 28 days, it's like 33 days.
Sorry,
37 days
or
whatever it happens to be.
Yeah. And you know,
every single pregnancy, when we started having home births, they were all 42, 43 weeks. What happened was, is her natural birthing process, it takes, because her biological clock's going 43 weeks, you know, 30, whatever, is 35 days instead of 28 days. Okay, cool. Well, then your natural birthing in your pregnancy is going to be that much longer as well. So all of her natural childbirths at home were anywhere between 42 and 43 weeks. And then there was the really odd one. We had one, my last son, he was born at 46 weeks. Totally healthy, totally naturally. That was another one that was totally unassisted. Because when, like you were saying, it's a clock. Every woman has a clock. At every birth that you're going to experience, and every pregnancy you go through, there is a clock, a biological clock, that just all of a sudden one day goes ding. The bun is ready. Yes. Get it out of the oven.
The clock works much better if you don't have fears. And if you're not under pressure, because honestly, we know as people that are involved in this process that your sexual hormones are not going to work very well when you're very much under stress, because when you're very much under stress and pressure, which often the system then will put on you, first of all, I call it performance pressure. You can't, you know. You will be so anxious that you produce so much adrenaline that you're constantly in your fight and flight reflex.
Yeah.
And that won't allow you to give birth, because inside you don't feel very safe. And this is, you know, there are so many things. This is why, you know, I really want to say again, you know, we know these problems. You, me, Sarah, we are all aware of that. And I think most of the audience also probably has heard of these problems, you know, inductions, the pressure, what your doctor is saying. Then you go to the hospital, what they are saying, and you feel tick, tick, tick. But, you know, for me, I really think is, what is the solution? I also look for what are good resources, what are solutions, what can we do now today in October in 2015, talking from Australia to Canada, and me being even German, I always think, come on, there is a solution to that. We can make birth a better experience again, and we need to, because, you know, I don't want to scare the audience thinking, oh my God, I have to hide underneath the kitchen table, yeah, and not tell anyone I'm pregnant. No, you should tell people you're pregnant, but you need to get a really good education, and you need to find a good practitioner that is supportive and will give you choices. And for the birth professionals, I think, you know, many of us, I say us now because I'm a person that is continuously, even that I have many things to offer and much knowledge, I still love to go to conferences and listen to what other midwives, doctors, you know, there is also doctors that are really great, like Michel Audin, Le Boyer, and many that are not well known yet. Yeah, there is, you know, many doctors that also think, come on, there is something else to childbirth than just induction, C-sections, and ripping babies out, you know. Some of them are moms themselves. Yeah, and they're also standing up for good things. We have to build a good community, and we need good education.
Good education is what it's about. It's about we have to go back to the drawing board, recreate the story. Worth story from the medical perspective.
Yes, but
I think that's the only way we can actually make that change.
Yeah, you know, there's change as with anything in life. You know, and come back to self-ownership. If you're going to buy a car, you're going to do research. You're buying a house, you're going to do research. Your kid's going to a school, you're going to do research. Why can't you do the research on your own pregnancy, on your own birthing? Share stories with other people that have been there, ask questions. We have this wonderful thing called internet, and you can Google anything nowadays, and you can get all the information you need. It's up to each and every one of us to take accountability and ownership of what knowledge we need to seek. And there is knowledge out there, but you've got to be willing to step forth and look for it and receive it. And not go back and say, I didn't know. We don't have that excuse anymore today. If we don't know, we can find out.
Yeah, I agree absolutely on that. And you know, the other thing is also, because we have the internet, you can really get in touch with a like-minded community, which is important because you might live somewhere fairly remote. You know, when I think about places here in Australia, you might really live fairly remote and there's only sort of maybe not many people around that think like you, and maybe say so. For instance, now there would be a hospital where you would go in birth because maybe that's the only place, and you think, okay, I'll go there, and they might just offer the one kind of class that kind of scares you even more. So I agree with you, Sarah. Our days, you don't have to get stuck on what's there, and you can empower yourself, and you can educate yourself, and you should, because can I say? When you find a like-minded community and when you find, you know, positive answers to your questions, it makes you feel good. And this is wonderful. One should feel good in the pregnancy instead of, oh God, I'm scared, I can't do it.
That's the biggest thing we accomplished out of doing the website is, in fact, just embrace it. I mean, these are some of the most sexual, sensual experiences the human body is ever going to enjoy. So don't do anything that's going to impede that pleasure. Just don't do anything. Try and expose yourself to people who've gone through the experience that can share with you that knowledge and the joy that they experienced going through that experience, rather than accepting the doctrines of all the fear and paranoia about childbirth, because the choice is yours.
But, you know, going back even to pregnancy, I mean, yes, I mean, I was one of those people, morning sickness all the way through. But, you know, you teach yoga and meditation, Yuta, and that's so important because I think if people kind of get into that meditation very, very early and learn to breathe and to calm down, you know, it's a system that when they get into that, you know, birthing thing, it's not something new to them and they've got a puff. You know, it's, you know, they learn how to calm everything down so they can cope through the contractions and everything else. Doing yoga stretches your body out in a different way. If it's not yoga you like, maybe swimming, maybe walking, maybe cycling. You know, when you're told you're pregnant, it doesn't mean now be inactive and lay down and walk around going hum-har all the time. It's, you know, the more productive you are, the easier pregnancy is going to be.
Absolutely correct. And you know, the thing is, that's actually why I started looking into all those things, because I always thought, well, what else can I learn to help women have and their partners and, you know, whoever is around having a better birthing experience? You know, like 32 years is a long journey that I've undertaken, and that's why I studied so many things. And I really think the key, personally, from my point of view, is one thing is to be well educated, but really in a fun way, you know, because it's fun to learn great things that make you feel good. The other thing is to really work with your body, because you are your body, you know, you're not separate from your body. And I agree, you are not sick. And even if you suffer from morning sickness, there's great things you can do, even for yourself. And, you know, that will help it pass. And through the pregnancy, your baby is participating. So anything you do, your baby takes part. It learns many things. So it's good to enjoy your body while you're pregnant. And last and least, definitely, you know, not only bring your body and your baby in alignment, also bring your mind in alignment. Yeah. It doesn't help to have a sportive body, a body that kind of feels good, if your mind is constantly nagging and telling you, no, that all your friends had a C-section, you will end up with one as well. And you know, all these things.
You end up becoming a statistic when you take
Yeah, but you know, the power of your mind, you know, like statistically, again, most big athletes, most big, you know, people that really, you know, achieved great things in the world, they do something what they call like, you know, mental coaching. They work with techniques from neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis, meditation, relaxation, to know how to keep, it's called what I call mind hygiene. So, you know, and this is the other thing I add in. But, you know, I kind of weave things together. When I teach yoga, we do a really nice relaxation at the end where we work on changing a bit the chemistry in our brain. And, you know, even a simple thing like gratitude has definitely is proven to make your brain so much more happy. So there's many things you can do because you have to let go of that fear. There is no reason to be fearful. Fear is in your mind. And you have to get your body, you know, like well-fed with good, healthy stuff. Because, you know, it's as if you, every time you eat something healthy, your little baby is just experiencing a healthy snack. Every time you feel happy, your baby feels happy. Every time you feel relaxed and soft, your baby feels relaxed. You know, there are so many things, really. And I think that's one key of having a good experience in the pregnancy when you look back on this time, because you know it's fluid, it's your pregnancy, it's your birth, but this is the start of parenthood. So you really, you know, you're kind of flowing from one step into the next, and you really want to make that a good experience. There's no doubt.
And it is a family affair. You know, you're pregnant, but, you know, invite your spouse to be a part of this.
Definitely.
And, you know, and with the spouse, if she is tired, if she is grumpy, if she is something else, get her to sit down, rub her back, rub her feet. You know, sometimes a pregnancy, if you overdo it, can be a little hard, or there could be, you know, certain weeks that, you know, are a bit more draining. And, you know, understand that our body is going through so many changes that, this your part of the pregnancy is to make sure that your wife is going through a good time with her pregnancy. So step up and help her where she needs it, with just support or taking care of the other kids or cooking the dinner or doing the vacuuming and whatever the case is. You're in this together. So participate.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing is, Sarah, that I want to add for the partners, whoever the partners are, because nowadays, you know, could be a great mix of, that it is also, as I said to you, babies can hear you inside the womb from 13 weeks on. So babies do know very well who is out there. So, you know, and all the senses inside the womb have been already developed at a very early stage. So as a partner, a life partner, birthing partner, you know, when you get involved in the pregnancy, that is going as if you also already get involved with the baby. And this is wonderful because babies know that. Mm-hmm. And it's much more fun. And yes, it is needed. I mean, okay, if you are a single mom, then find a good friend of yours that is going to help you.
Yes.
And if you already have some kids, then let the kids be part of this whole experience as well. Because, you know, babies sometimes wriggle and kick. Or calm down when you
do
place the hands on the belly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know,
sit
like
on
this.
The bladder.
And it's true, as we say, it's a family affair. I agree on that, absolutely. You know, you're not alone in that. But yeah, really, even for the birth, maybe you can use your birthing partner skills, or maybe the woman doesn't want any, but you know, you want to be well prepared for the day of the birth, and then not suddenly think, oops, what am I supposed to do? You know, so you want to practice those things, because there's many nice things like breathing is something you can practice together, massage you can practice together, you know, kissing, hugging, there's so much great stuff out there for you as couples. That will, once you've practiced them together already many times in the pregnancy, on the day of the birth, they're just instantaneously there for you. So, you know, that's good. That's what you want.
And of course, you know, Bill, as you've been through that, you know, with your wife, you know, that when, you know, the wife is actually giving birth, but, I mean, you're so much a part of that birth, and you cannot see a child come into the world without feeling some sense of most beautiful, exuberant joy.
Like I've told you before in the show, there's absolutely no other sexual essential experience you can ever have. Sharing in the arrival of the birth of a child, especially if it's one of yours, there's nothing that can ever replace that. One of the things that we've kind of skipped over and not really touched on very much is actually we've talked a lot about the women, the mother, we've talked a lot about the father, but what we've not even talked a single second about is the baby.
Childbirth
for the baby.
Okay. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
The baby, folks, is the most important thing that we should be talking about here in the experience of this whole birth. Because the natural birth process is very, very, very important to a baby. Because it is the single most traumatic experience that person should ever have to experience in its lifetime. And before everybody gets their back up and say, what do you mean traumatic experience? We're going to try to make it as peaceful and blah, blah, blah as we can. We're going to have our music playing and we're going to have this beautiful breathing. For that baby,
it's got a lot of work to do.
It is the most traumatic, most shocking experience that a human being should ever have to go through. Because the transition that child is going through from the time it's in the womb to the first second it hits that ice cold air and it takes that first breath of air into its lungs and fills its lungs with air for the first time is a complete metamorphosis from one form of life into another. It has gone from a totally aquatic being. It does not breathe air, does not have any exposure to the outside world or anything. So no matter how peaceful and traumatic all the drama you try to remove from it, so the less intervention with the childbirth, the better calibrated the child is. When the baby is birthed into the world, that very first experience should be. And so if you think about it, if it was a beautiful birth, the child experience with very minimal intervention and everything else, that should be that baby's baseline. That baseline is the baseline upon which future pain thresholds are calibrated from. So going through the natural process, you make it as peaceful as you can because you know it is the single most dramatic experience a human being will ever experience, is going from being a fish to actually being a human being. You have no idea what that transition is actually all about.
But can I say something, Bill? The great thing is, if you really have what I call now a really good birth, I was trained in a hospital, according to Mr. Leboyer, who brought back the natural childbirth in the 70s. And already as a really young midwifery student, I could see when women were giving birth naturally and, you know, their partners were there and they could take any position, that the babies that came out would open their eyes really wide because it was semi-dark lights, it was nice and warm, and then they would look around, wriggle their fingers, and then after a moment they would make a sound. Not all of them are crying really hard. Some just go, nyeh, because they already show their character. And already as a really young woman in my 20s, early 20s, I learned that when you have a good birth, you know, it is inside the trauma that birth naturally is, and I agree on that. Still, you know, the way how you can make the most pleasant and smooth transition into
the world,
you know, going from element water to coming on the planet, you know. And I really have to say, yeah, babies do participate. Babies want to be born and they really help, you know. They kind of move their feet. They really want to be born. And if we invite them to be born and we tell them, don't be scared, just come out. Yeah, I'm with you as a mom. I'm sure they will, okay, I'm coming.
Well, you hit on the other key point too. That's why, you know, guys, you're going to regret this
if you don't get involved in your in the pregnancy from basically day one. I mean, you were there, you had a great time when you conceived the baby, but you have no idea what it's like to actually be fully involved in the whole pregnancy and childbirth thing until you've actually gone through it from start to finish. Because
Bill, it's a bit like most, if you the most important aspect. It's as if you plant a seed in the garden and you watch how your seed grows, and then finally it's harvest time. I mean, you know, this is this process for the birth partners. You are there. You are part of the garden. You are the gardener.
It's not only that though, because you're so involved. That baby from probably about 8 to 10 weeks of gestation, its energies, you actually, it's bonded to you.
Oh yeah,
energetically, and the more you're involved in that connection with the child, when you see that baby in your hands that very first time, you already know what that child's going to become. Like, believe it or not, because that energy, you're so well connected to that child. That's why it's one of the lovely and amazing things that we did in this province is the way in which we have these birthing suites, and that where they basically you can tell the medical profession just get the hell out of the way. Might have changed now, and let us have this contact, this full contact with each other during this birthing process, and please don't interrupt us until, you know, she's screaming and I actually say, okay, cool, get involved. Because that whole energy connection that you've made with that child, when it comes into the world, it's part of that, like I say, it's a very physically traumatic experience for the baby to experience, but the energies of, because you're there, it already knows you. It's already formed a bond with you, not just with the mother who's raised the child. If you have the luxury of having some of your other children in proximity of the birth, the whole experience for that child now is one coming into a world of love.
Mm-hmm.
Really quickly forgets that whole traumatic experience of birth. It just becomes a calibration point that the mind uses later on in life to establish a baseline for pain threshold.
There's actually
recognition for a threat to life.
There is actually a couple of stories, and one I've done, I had the honor of doing, of a woman who gave birth to a 1-pound baby, and they told her, well, you know, hold it now, its lungs, its heart, everything is just, you know, underdeveloped. And she held her baby, and she actually, with her mind, went in there to pump onto the lungs, pump onto the heart. And, you know, this is now a 4-year-old child running around perfectly healthy. And there's been other stories of babies born dead and mother just holding it and with love and the heartbeat and the stroke and it coming back to life. So we must never, ever underestimate the power of love energy, because it has its own force. And if it's you know, that child will be. So, you know, and I think that's why it's essential that you get to hold your baby the moment that it is born. It needs to be right there with the mother, with the heart, with that connection of
absolutely,
vibration.
Absolutely, absolutely, no doubt. And actually, I agree with what Bill says. Actually, if possible, even the first hour after the birth should be really undisturbed. And, you know, the only people possibly holding the baby is really the mother, so the baby can really connect with the mom and the dad. And, you know, there shouldn't be many activities around it, because really it is the 1 hour where many things will get started and where also babies kind of really start arriving here and with their senses and everything. And yes, you know, I agree. Love is a healer. There is no doubt for me when it comes to those things. Definitely.
Wonderful. Well, you know, that's the start. And I know, folks, we've given you kind of a lot of horror stories here today. And, you know, kind of we want to shake you up, because if we didn't kind of turn up the volume and tell you really what's going on, you know, you would probably just let it be and forget about it. We're hoping that we've kind of shaken you up a little bit to know that these are the practices that are going on. And, you know, these are the options you can have, is a beautiful birth, that connection. You know, having it naturally. People have been doing it for thousands of years. How many trillions of people are in the world? You know, natural births are as common as conception. So we need to bring it back to that beautiful state of being. And yes, protective, but we've got to start compartmentalizing. We've got to start mechanicalizing, clinicalizing, and certainly not having the lawyers in there dictating what is needed for the mother, you know, for that baby. So you know your rights. Know what you, when you go into that doctor, go in with your list and say, I don't want this, I don't want this, this is what I do want. Can you make it happen? If you can't, I will look for somebody that can. That is your right. So go in there knowing what they are. Yuta has a wonderful program where she'll take you right through your pregnancy of understanding what you need to do, the whole process of being pregnant, preparing for that birth. She works with other doulas and midwives in helping them gain the knowledge that they need. It is out there, folks. You've just got to be willing to look for it, willing to participate in your own pregnancy, in your own birthing, and stop handing yourselves over carte blanche to the medical world without any ownership or knowledge yourself. Because if you really want to bring the world, the baby, into a beautiful world of love and passion and truth, then try and do it without going through the clinical way. There are the options. Just know what they are. So in closing, would you both kind of close off with something to leave with our audience? Bill, I'll go with you first.
Like I said to everybody, it's all about the... It really does boil down with me. It's an amazing sexual essential experience that no man should ever be denied of experience with his partner. More importantly, it is one of the most amazing things to see a baby come into the world, the way it's meant to come into the world, without any interventions whatsoever. And a lot of it boils down to people making the correct choices for themselves. It took my wife 4 children going through hospital births, and they were all pretty good hospital births. They were good experiences. I have nothing bad to say about the medical profession, because they do serve vital roles in the childbirth. You as an individual have the right to make that choice as to whether you want to go through the medical birthing system, or do you want to experience a natural childbirth with the experiences and surrounded by the people that you care about and you can trust in helping you deliver that baby. And that's what my wife and I got involved with, and that's what Birth Love was all about, was empowering women and their partners to stand up for their rights to make that choice. It's your choice. If you take the time to educate yourself, and you can make this informed decision, this is what you believe is the best way to bring your children into the world, then by all means, you should have the rights to pursue that.
And know what you're pursuing.
Yeah, and to have access to that information so that you can make these informed choices. Right now, unfortunately, it is a seller's market, meaning the doctors in the medical profession are telling you all the information they want you to know, and you just gobble it up as being the God's honest truth, and that's all there is. You have an obligation to yourself to educate yourself about all of the natural, basically the best way to start off if you're pregnant, actually just start reading some books on human biology. It'll explain to you the process, the natural way it works, and then from there you can develop understanding of how childbirth works from a biological standpoint. From there, start approaching your doctors and looking at alternatives and educate yourself to the possibilities of what you want. And you got to remember, it's your birth, it's your child. You want to bring that child into the world to be part of your life. You want to make it from the day you conceive that baby, the day it comes into this world, as peaceful and joyous and full of love as possible.
Yeah.
Educate yourself, and there are people like me who will stand behind you if you run into legal problems where the government comes after you and says you can't do it that way. Because even in our province, we're in British Columbia, there are ways in which, and there are loopholes in the government that allow us to do certain things outside of the law. And there are places that we can get you to, that people we can refer you to, that can give you the type of birth experience that you're looking for. But it is your right. And I want to, like I say, it's unfortunate we lost the website. There was a whole bunch of reasons behind it. It was an amazing resource for women and for their partners and for friends and family and everybody who basically want to learn everything there was to know about childbirth, this was one of the premier sites available.
Well, now we have Yuta.
With her 30 years of experience. Oh, we have Yuta doing the same thing.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yes. With all the knowledge that she's got there and with what she's accumulated and the program, the system, and everything that you need to know, now you can go to Yuta and she'll guide you in the right direction. Right, Yuta?
Okay, and what does Yuta say? Well, she says, first of all, I hope you enjoyed the program. Secondly of all, please trust yourself. You can do it, but... again, nowadays, I agree, you need to get in touch with, for instance, the Midwifery Association in your country. That might be a helpful tool. And as I said, you know, the great advantage of our days is that we actually do have the internet, yeah? So, and for me, I'm really already into working very internationally. I won't be able to come and help you birth your baby, but what I can offer to you is really the program I've developed, because my vision is that women everywhere in the world have access to good information that empowers them and their partners and really gets them positively excited about the birth, because this is how it should be. And if you want to find me, well, my name is very difficult, I admit that. You could just Google elementsofbirth.com, and I'm sure Sarah is going to put my name.
Everything
which is
on the poster.
Jutta Wohlrab, and I know that's hard to find. And, you know, I'd love to come and hear something from you. You can find me on Facebook. You can send me an email through my webpage. And I really, honestly, I say that. If you want to know something, get in touch with me. And look, I created a lovely program called Happy Birthing Days because I love happiness and I wanted to share everything out of 30 years, you know, and also the knowledge that I really gained from working in home birthing, birth centers, hospitals, big hospitals in three countries. I put all my knowledge in there because I observed so many things and, you know, I love what I do. And I really want you to be able to get the birth that you really want, because this is what this is about. So please get in touch with me. And I'm sure, even that I don't know you, I know that you can do it, because birth is, you know, as someone said just the other day, better birth, better earth. And I added with elements of birth. And I agree, we want to have a better earth, because really, this is where we live. And, you know, yeah, made with love for you. And thank you. And that's all I want to say, because I think we've said so much already.
Yes, we certainly have. And also you can catch the show that I did with her before, which goes in a little more in depth in her program and, you know, and the birthing experience. And I hope that, you know, that you haven't been intimidated by the show, but understand, don't be intimidated by the system, by the medical system. Know your rights. Know what the beautiful journey is of being pregnant, of birthing, even what is required after birthing. You shouldn't have to ever go through this in fear or in stress. And the more you know and the more support you have around you, the less likely that is ever to happen. But it is up to you folks to kind of know what you're getting into so that you can enjoy the ride, okay? Because it really is quite beautiful to be pregnant and to birth a child. Really quite beautiful. So do it without fear and do it with the right knowledge. Contact Yuta and she will set you up on the right path. So thank you very much, Bill and Yuta, for sharing your knowledge here today.
Thank you, Sarah. And I say, happy birthing day to you. That's my wish.
For all those mums to be out there, definitely.
Yeah, and even the midwives, doulas, and doctors, and whoever is there, because, you know, we all want to have a good birth, because it makes us all feel really good. And, you know, that's really, you know, what this is about. Yeah,
yeah, everybody's endorphins are raised when that baby is born, right? You can't help it. So thank you, Bill.
That's one thing I just want. What I want to just close off on before we take off here is that even with all the thing that happened with my wife that was really frustrating for her, it was all the good work that she was doing. There was a whole bunch of changes that happened. And we had a serious conversation one day. And she says, well, I don't feel like I'm doing anything like really productive, because, you know, I'm telling all these people these stories about these wonderful birth people are still making the decision to go off down the path. And I sat with her one day and I said, if of all the work that we put into this, if all that ever happened is we stopped the doctor from doing an unnecessary C-section, if he grabbed that knife and he was about to cut into a woman and he stopped, thought about it, and he actually put the knife down and said, what the hell, let's see what happens, then you've done all the work you could ever ask for in the world. About 3 weeks after we had that conversation, we got a letter from a doctor saying, I've been following your website, and I finally got brainwashed into it, and there was this woman, we were about to do a C-section on her, and I just said, you know what, screw it. I'm going to see whether all of this, what they're saying is true or not, because the problem was, is as a doctor, he lost belief in the natural process. Got so ingrained in it has to go this way and has to go this way. And that one day, it just resonated with him in such a fashion that he actually stopped and he didn't use the knife. And he wrote us, and a few years later, a few months later, he said his C-section rates had gone way down. He'd actually fallen back in love with being a doctor again, because he learned to believe in the human body's innate ability to heal itself, and it the body's ability just to do what it's supposed to do, with there to help it out in the event that something does go wrong, but really just leave it alone.
Right.
So I just want to leave.
You see that one impact, right? You know, change one doctor's mind that now changed the whole birthing experience for other women, and never mind the other doctors that he influenced along the way.
Fantastic.
The trickle-down effect is that you have one doctor stopped, and then everybody in his practice, and everybody in that whole birthing center, he's in Australia. Again, his whole birthing center, their C-section rate went from something like 38% to 6.4%.
Right.
That is huge reduction.
Yes. So these stories do make a difference, and we will keep on telling them, and we keep hoping that we'll have this impact. But all it needs is one person to change the direction, and the domino effect happens. So folks, pass the show on. You know, if you've got a friend that's become pregnant, pass the show on. Hear both of you to shows, one here with Bill and one here and the other one with me, and really kind of get the knowledge that you need. Pregnancy and birthing is nothing to be afraid of. It's an absolutely wonderful experience. The lack of knowledge is what is fearful. The more you do know, the more ready you are for it, and more that you'll have a wonderful experience. So thank you, Jutta and Bill, for being with me today.
Thank you, Sarah. That was lovely. Thanks, Bill. That was great.
Oh, no problem. I get conned into doing these shows on all sorts of topics. It's always a blast to do them. So
you don't get conned.
You get so many shows where it's all women's perspectives, and then you get this weird guy who has this really weird guy perspective on things. my guy perspective's a little different than a typical guy perspective on these issues. So
that's okay. Yeah. We need all of the issues.
Twist.
Right. Okay. So, folks, so, you know, we hope that we've given you the right knowledge here today. And, you know, now it's up to you. Run with it. You know, ask the questions, inquire more. But most importantly, enjoy your whole pregnancy and birthing journey. Because it's not just about falling in love with the child when it's in your arms. It's falling in love with that child from that moment you know you're pregnant and enjoying the ride. So until next time, folks, remember, we all came in this way. So let's enjoy the process. Bye for now.